And I'd like to thank the invitation to come here and the opportunity to tell you a bit about invasive species in Australia. That's interesting. I had some trouble with the definition of what invasive species are, and listening to the talks today, I still have some trouble with what the definition of invasive species are. In Australia, we'd have a very large number of intercepts through quarantine, which are not invasive, but they're arriving at the border. So we need to distinguish between what arrives at the border and what gets through. Of the intercepts, which are the things we can identify, only about 11% of them are new species. So there's a continual rain of species appearing at the borders of all of our countries, some of which become established, but the vast majority don't. So an invasive species is not just one that arrives at the border. The ones that become major pests, and we had a definition of this from a first talk, is probably 3% of those that were intercepted, or this is the data that Darren Criticross and his colleagues recognised from New Zealand. Now, looking at it another way, we live in an environment, a farming system or an agricultural system in Australia that is completely based on exotic plants, well, almost completely. Unlike the examples we were given from the States, our exotic or clearing and introduction of exotic plants has only been going on perhaps a couple of hundred years, a lot less than most countries. Does this mean we should have a different invasive type of fauna or different invasive system? I'm not sure. Less than half, but a fair proportion of our pest arthropods are in fact exotics. So that does raise the question of why do we bother about it at all? If all that's happening is species are coming in the whole time, are becoming pests, and then we're treating them like pests, why are we worried about it? Perhaps they just replace each other competitively on an ongoing basis. And I haven't really decided what the answer to that is, that should we be worrying about it? We talk a lot about invasive species, like the invasion of the worlds, as we saw in a film clip earlier on. Is this important? I suspect it is, but it is clear, on the other hand, that we're not just getting infected by more and more invasive species, that the proportion of damage that's occurring is not getting steadily worse every year. We're not disappearing under a mountain of invasive species. Does it mean we're dropping some out at the bottom? Now, I'm not clear. I haven't been able to find literature that really has very good data about this, but we should think what it is we're trying to do. In Australia, we have a plant production of some $19 billion a year, and about $6.5 billion of exports. Now, one area that people haven't talked about is, in fact, that if in our system, market access, that is our ability to export produce, is going to depend on it being pest-free. So you go from these biological control programs where you're reducing the impact of pest to a point you've actually got about to prove complete absence of a pest. And this is an enormous jump. And we haven't heard very much about that. But that explains why in Australia we've put recently a lot more resources into what we call biosecurity. And that's the prevention, as far as we can, of allowing pests to arrive and become established and become pests. If we can eradicate them, we can maintain trade. And with, in fact, the reduction of tariff barriers, trade barriers around pests and single freedom from pests is becoming a very important issue, and this is something we do need to recognise more. So what I'd like to do is to give you some examples from Australia where we've had recent invasions that have become established and where we've tried to do something about it. In the vast majority of cases, we've failed, and that's again an interesting problem in itself. So the first one's Asian papaya fruit fly, a Bactrocera species. It's now, in fact, officially considered in Australia as exotic, but absent. And this is one of the few species of a successful cases of a successful eradication program. The incursion was found in 1995 by a farmer who happened to notice something strange going on in his papaya fruit. And control was declared in 1998. It probably cost us about $135 to $150 million to go through this. So we're prepared to put very substantial resources into managing and eradicating pests rather than just controlling them. Keeping a control and management would have cost considerably less. We set up a quarantine zone. This was monitored, this is going through the strategy, monitored with a grid of standard fruit fly traps. The main control, eradication, was achieved with male annihilation using kainite blocks and attractants, male attractants. Spot spraying was used for cleaning up the hot spots that were left, and a big campaign of fruit collection. And also that was used for monitoring, and I'll explain in a minute why that is. So this was in northern Queensland. The pest probably came in through on fruit from the northern areas. The quarantine area that was declared was some 78,000 square kilometres. Once that's been declared, all fruit moving in and out of this area has to be inspected and proven to be free of fruit fly, which is a major expense, rose blocks. One of the interesting features of this is that it included the main wet tropics World Heritage area, the Daintree Forest and so on, in the North Queensland. So if you're trying to eradicate a pest and you've got it moving into native vegetation, you can't actually use chemicals in these areas. Luckily, this wasn't a problem because the pest didn't move into it, but we had to prove it hadn't moved into it without using chemicals. And this is where the fruit collection became important. There is some theory about invasion biology that's been developing and coming slowly out of these projects, and I think we need a lot more of this. So here's some work by Alfie Meats. That was trapping that carried out in the 8 weeks before the control program was set up. What it shows is that the at the point, the epicenter of this invasion, the population built up very fast, and as you moved away from this epicenter, the population was much lower. So early on, you have a hot spot where there's a very high population, and then going out for 100 kilometres or so, the population's much lower. Obviously, if you can really hit that hot spot hard, you might be able to prevent the movement out and, in fact, control it in the outside areas. The other point that's interesting in this this example, though, these two starred points, where we find that in urban areas, in invasions, a lot of the invasions are occurring into urban areas through airports or through ports. And here there is a completely different type of distribution of fruit and hosts of the pests. And in fact, it's a very difficult area to control pests in. And yet, if you're going to eradicate, this is where you need to go. So we need a bit more information about invasion in urban areas. The main method of control was a male attractant, and these kainite blocks are soaked in methyl eugenol, which is a standard male attractant for many species of fruit flies, not all, which was mixed with maldison which killed them on contact. There were tens of thousands of these blocks were nailed on grids throughout the 78,000 square kilometre quarantine area. Again, massive fruit collection. You know how as you come in through airports, there's a lot of fruit collected. Well, one of the main reasons is to prevent this incursions of fruit flies. So at the Cairns Airport, and in fact at the roadblocks, tons of fruit were collected every month from people driving through. However much you tell people not to do it, they still do it. Human behaviour is a big problem. Now the red line you can see down the bottom is the fruit we collected in the rainforest areas. So we collected rainforest fruit from there. And in fact, this is the number of fruit collected. It's not the presence of the papaya fruit fly. And papaya fruit fly was only found in one species of fruit. So we were lucky we didn't have to move into there and deal with the problem. And this is an eradication pattern on a log scale. You can see the actual fall is pretty fast in the first year or so of treating. And then there's a mopping up operation that goes on till you get to the flat line at the bottom. Okay, the next example I want to give is a very different sort of problem, this current lettuce aphid, and you've heard a bit about this earlier on. It's called now exotic, but it's present in Australia. We've completely lost our ability to eradicate it, so now it's under management. It arrived in Tasmania in 2004, and this is a species that was blown in, probably from New Zealand, on very strong winds. So you get these catastrophic events that occur, that why these things come in, and in this case, no amount of barrier treatment would have stopped it. It also means it hasn't come in through a port. We've been unable to stop the spread. It was spread through all of the states of Australia by 2006, both by wind, but also loose lettuce is moved around in trucks, and we were moving, even though this was a declared pest, we were unable to prevent its movement. Aphids are cryptic lettuce leaves, they can't be seen. And now, in fact, integrated pest management is used, has been demonstrated to work, and is used as standard method of control. Interestingly, one of the ways to monitor and detect these aphids is in aerial plankton. So these 8.5 metre suction traps, in fact, will detect the presence of aphids in a crop or in an area before they're found in the crop. And one of the tricks in eradicating, controlling invasive species is to get there as early as possible. So if you can get there a week or two earlier, by knowing that they're going to occur, you're going to be a lot more effective. So this, we're now thinking about a grid of these traps to try and get invasive aerial species for vegetable areas, growing areas in Australia. This is another friend you've seen before, silverleaf whitefly. Here though, and going back to the talk we had about the evolution of genetics, it's an interesting problem because it's a biotype that's a problem. Not the species, I mean the species itself, there are reasonably, we have native whitefly species that are not a problem. This is exotic but established in Australia, and it's now considered a major pest species. It arrived in 92-93, so all of these are reasonably recent. It's become a major pest in Queensland where the environment suits it. There's been some very nice work done recently by Australian and Chinese colleagues showing that in fact this species was able to invade successfully because of asymmetric mating interactions between the biotype, that's the invasive biotype, and the native biotype. And the invasive biotype's been able to replace the indigenous one, not by straight competition for food, but in this case by asymmetric mating, and there's a paper in Nature last year describing this species and some related papers. It's resistant to a number of insecticides, so control and eradication of it's a problem. That's three?
Three.
Right. So we're using IGR, which works, and classical biological control. South African citrus thrips, another species considered to be exotic, but established in Australia. The one that we've got in Australia seems to feed mainly on bryophyllum species. Now, although in a molecular way we can't distinguish it from the main South African pest, we don't know whether to treat it now as a major pest or as, in fact, a biological control insect that could be used for controlling bryophyllum. It's fairly easy to control with insecticides and predatory mites, so we're having a wait-and-see strategy. Red-banded mango caterpillar is another one that's come in through the north. It's established in Australia, exotic. It's come through this island chain between Papua New Guinea and Australia, probably being moved by people carrying fruit in boats, fishermen. And it's existing on feral mango trees in the northern tip of Cape York, but at the moment it hasn't reached any areas of crop infection. Capra beetle is an example of a species that hasn't arrived yet. It's exotic and it's absent from Australia. It's a major threat to our largest export industry. And our estimates, if it became established, it would be costing hundreds of millions of dollars a year. So here is a pest. Although we've had intercepts, we've had no incursions. Because it would have so much impact, we would definitely be prepared to spend millions of dollars eradicating it should it become established. And this has occurred in the States too. It's mainly found through Africa, Northern Africa at the moment. It's a continual problem, and interceptions are found regularly at our borders. Glassy-winged sharpshooper is another one that hasn't arrived yet. It's exotic but absent from Australia, but we consider it as a major pest. It transmits a bacterium, causing Pierce's disease. It's been moving through the Pacific Islands in the last 10 years, some very nice work being published by American authors. And we're looking to see whether, if it did get in, whether our native Haemoptera could in fact transmit the bacteria and what hosts it would attack. Here there's another nice example of some work done by Pettit and his colleagues that showed the longer it's been established in the Pacific Islands, the greater the population. So you must get these things earlier. With time, the populations go up. 1 minute?
Sure.
We'll finish, right. So what do we need to do? We need faster detection of incursions. We need rapid, accurate diagnostics. Need to improve our knowledge of biology and ecology, the main threats. Need to develop better quantitative predictions, the invasion processes. And we need sound economic assessments. Both the public and private benefits and costs, so we can make decisions whether we do spend millions of dollars or not. We've set up a national centre involving most of the players in Australia to in fact work in a more coordinated way on this. We have about $100 million to spend in this area. Thank you.
Thank you, James, for accepting our invitation, coming all the way from Australia to give this talk. So give him a round of applause again, James.